Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'll speak with you for a few minutes. I think he'd take very long, but they're just saying to John, feel some obligation to give you a sort of a direct feel for how things look from my vantage point. It seems to me that so far as HR1 in general and the welfare reform title in particular are concerned, we are in a situation now where our concern should be simply with how to salvage some credibility for what has been now a three-year effort. And I'm considerably concerned lest we handle the situation in a way that will be hard to defend terms of the kinds of situations in which we will be challenged between now and November. I've had a fair amount of exposure to this in answering questions on TV programs and in various meetings around the country since I've been traveling as a surrogate. And while the situation isn't really too bad now, I think it can get worse if we are really caught with a knife in our hand on this bill. Stevenson has hit upon a rather clever device to try to put it in our hands by offering an amendment so close to HR1 that we can never explain the differences or, more precisely, get across the significance of these differences. I don't know for certain that he will offer this amendment. We tried to find out just by way of approaching his staff earlier today on the basis of we're trying to see through our way through the sequence of events on this bill and so on, and is the senator planning an amendment, and if so, what will be in it and so on. But the best indications are that he probably will, and he will offer it as soon as the Ribicoff Amendment has been tabled. The vote to table the Ribicoff Amendment is due at 4 o'clock. Today. Stevenson may not bring up the amendment he's going to bring up today, but he could. And so he needed, we should be clear.
Vote on table about it.
Excuse me?
Vote on table succeed.
Yes, I'm sure it will. Now, what Stevenson has done in the first instance, most important thing, is to reduce the benefit level to the benefit level of the House passed bill. So that it has now been reduced from 2,600 in the latest Ribicoff version to 2,400. His staff said that he might also eliminate the only other cost item in his amendment, which is an increase in the authorization for daycare services from an additional 400 in our bill to 700. Of course, it's an authorization item anyway. It doesn't necessarily control appropriation, but he may even eliminate that. That would leave, then, a series of differences which I think it would be impossible to explain as being sufficient to justify a no vote on the amendment. Now, taking it a step further, if Scott gets up and says, I'm glad to welcome Stevenson aboard, he has now offered what is, for all practical purposes, the Scott Amendment, and I'm going to join in supporting it. I urge my fellow Republicans to join with me. This will at least achieve a respectable vote. It will add to the dozen or so we might have expected to support the Scott Amendment itself, at least another dozen, maybe not many more, because some of the liberals who were moderate liberals, most liberals have fallen off already, but some of the remainder who have stuck with Ribicoff will probably fall off on this. I don't think it would have the votes to pass, but it would mean, in effect, that we were calling Stevenson's bluff. We were saying, now that you have gone this far, so that the remaining differences are so small, We, in the interest of welfare reform, are joining in it. That, I think, would effectively checkmate from here on out the effort to make out that we had consciously and deliberately let the bill die. If the Stevens Amendment, as I believe, fails, then we revert to efforts to put on some sort of test amendment along the lines of the Roth-Byrd Amendment that seemed to be gathering momentum and probably has enough votes to pass. It isn't really a test amendment because it includes, ironically, a lot of money for wage supplementation. I say ironically because the strongest opposition on the conservative side, of course, has been to the coverage of the working poor. And here the committee would be ending up, and the Senate would be ending up with the coverage of the working poor without any reform of the AFTC provisions. But that would then mean that if the bill went into conference and came out with bloated 1, 2, 3 titles, and this Roth test plus wage supplement title, it would be easy to veto. Conversely, if contrary to my guess, Stevenson were approved, then the result would be, in effect, that there would be kicked off a filibuster on the conservative side until the debt ceiling bill got over. And at that point, 1, 2, and 3 would be detached, put on the debt ceiling bill, and go into conference where Mills has said that he would not take 1, 2, and 3. And you might then be spared the need to reach these overblown Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and adult assistance titles altogether. So either way, it seems to me, the monkey is left on their back. If they reject Stevenson, or the Stevenson-Scott Amendment, that has then been done not because we didn't try, but because there had been defections on the part of the Liberals who would not go along with a bill that had been stripped of so many features of the Ribbicoff Amendment. If it does succeed, that is, if that amendment is adopted, and the bill as a whole then goes down the drain, then this is because of the long bird filibuster. And we're still, it seems to me, in a situation where we try. Whereas if we vote no on Stevenson, we have a hard time explaining why we were against it. And we are then in a situation where when it goes down, we of course have been directly responsible for lining up votes. This at any rate is the reason why it seemed to me that the best course we could follow in these circumstances is to cross up the Stevenson effort to embarrass us by saying, now that you have, for all practical purposes, proposed the amendment Senator Scott was going to propose, we will support it. And that leaves us, seems to me, in a position of having fought a good fight from the beginning and have been frustrated by a combination of circumstances, including particularly the lateness of time available and so on. I see no way in which there's any realistic possibility whatsoever that you could actually get on your desk a bill with the first three titles in unacceptable form and Title IV in acceptable form.
First three.
Well, that's the reason, essentially, why it seemed to me that this was a new twist in the situation.
The angle
of
that is that we talked
to Chairman Mills this morning, and he was pretty strong a week ago, but he's sounding a little bit more waffly, not so much on whether or not he'd strike it from the debt limit, but whether or not he would be against the first three titles in the bloated form that they're in now. He kept talking about changing the effective date, which would mean that he would accept them if only they would take effect maybe in the fiscal year 74 or fiscal year 75, building in some additional costs then. And I think it's hard to predict whether or not he will really stick with his position of not letting the first three titles be amended to the Yes, sir. It still would. I mean, ultimately, you're confronted with the problem. Yes.
Where is the tax increase?
What is it?
What's the, you think the, did you say, you think for all practical purposes, this is life age number one? But again, yeah. The child care, that goes from 400 to 700.
75%
of partial child care.
Yes, 400 million in new money. Theory was
that
if we were going to require mothers and school-aged children to register to work and take a job, then we ought to provide daycare for those children. These are school-aged children.
Degraded those to 700.
Yeah. He may well drop that. In any event, of course, it's a conferenceable item. But just to illustrate, now somebody asked me why did we vote against it. The differences remaining would be that the Stevenson Amendment required states to maintain benefit levels. This was in our bill in 69, 70, and until H.R. 1 came out of the House in 71. He drops the so-called tax rate, retained share of earnings expenses, from 67% to 60. We have been earlier, the law was 50. When the bill was first submitted to the Congress, it was 50. You can't make an issue of principle out of that. There is a cost of living adjustment geared to increases like the one we proposed and has been adopted for Social Security. He requires that a job that a person on welfare be required to take has a full minimum wage. This is substantively the worst feature of it, but again, pretty hard to say that where we have 3/4 of the minimum, this has full minimum. It's a conferenceable item anyway, that this was a reason for killing the bill. And the only other difference is that the Stevenson bill would disregard the amount of income taxes paid in determining income levels for purposes of supplementation. And that's it. And as I say, you may eliminate one issue by reducing child care back to the House level. In any event, we could seek to get it back, and in the final analysis, it would be a question of appropriation levels in any event. Minimum wage, I think we would have a very good chance of getting back if we ever reached conference. We're not really talking about conference here in any event, as far as I can see. We're really talking about Scott, whom I talked to earlier today, wanted me to say to you that this is not really an issue of getting a bill. It's an issue of how do we look coming out of the rubble of the loss destruction of the bill. And that really is it. It's a matter of, as I see it, salvaging the credibility of our
commitment.
Right.
Getting a hard look, as you know, and to the structure. So,
perceived as a significantly liberal move, what it will be seen as is a refusal, in effect, to support our own bill, because the moves involved are so insignificant in terms of basic elements of your initial proposal. Several of the changes are reversions to earlier forms of our own bill. This is true of the move back toward a 50% incentive level from 67, partway to 60. The maintenance of benefit levels was in our own original bill, and I testified for it in 70. So that out of the whole list, you get two that move back to earlier versions for cost of living adjustments. Pretty hard to argue with, especially since the principle was one that we put forward as applied to Social Security. Contact with Stevenson on the part of my people.
That's right. no visitor until New Year's if he has to. That's wrong.
Yeah. I believe that's so, and I don't believe that you could ever get enough votes for cloture because too many people will have fallen off this. The other side, maybe we're going to be whipsawed. It's conceivable that this version would come out if we did do this, but the version that will be pushed if we don't is that we killed our own bill. And in fact, the differences are so small.
Pretty much already.
Yeah.
They've been saying our story, but that's my failure to move to River Compensation.
Moves that are involved here are literally dinky by comparison.
I would agree that sensitive.